ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Helena Ronis, co-founder and CEO at AllFactors, and we're going to talk about data and data-driven insights. This episode is brought to you by UserList, a lifecycle messaging tool for SaaS companies. It's perfect for sending smart onboarding campaigns or any other behavior-based communication. We have everything you need to get started quickly and painlessly. Developer-friendly API, campaign templates, and hands-on support from the founders. Try UserList free at userlist.com. Hi, Helena.
Hey, Jane. It's great to be here.
We're so excited. The topic that you're a master in is absolutely essential for so many of us. But before we dive in, tell us more about your background and the product that you'll be launching soon.
Yeah. So my background has all of the pieces that you need as a tech founder. And I'm realizing that in retrospect. I come from Israel. In Israel, I served in the tech unit of the Air Force, and my technical understanding comes from there. Then when I moved to the Bay Area, I did product and marketing, and I studied marketing in college in Israel. And then I started startups. I learned probably most of my sort of product management, design skills, marketing skills, and how to run a business through starting startups. My first startup was a consumer app in 2012. It was meant to connect people based on activity interests. So location-based social networking app, helping people find activity buddies like for running or cycling. And working on that initial consumer app, I learned by doing, learned how to build a consumer product, how to market a consumer product, and found the team to work on it. Ultimately, that first startup didn't work out. Consumer is very hard, especially it's very sort of financing driven. And when you start your first startup without understanding what startups are, it's kind of tough to raise money. So that was the biggest reason why this startup didn't work out. I basically ran out of my savings. And so from there, I moved on to work as a product and marketing manager. I was running the product and marketing function for another startup that was very low on team members, but was high on cash because the founder had a previous exit. And so I met him at a co-working space where I was working on that consumer app. And so it was like a smooth transition, basically. And so as I was running a product for him, we shifted from a consumer product, which was like an app for celebrities to do live stream sessions with their fans in like a FaceTime format. We switched from that type of model that was meant to drive a lot of traction and monetize with ads that did not work out to an enterprise model where the technology was taken and repurposed into a product that can be catered to organizations that need to live stream specific events, like a game for a college or like a news broadcasting for a station. And so, yeah, and so it was an interesting transition from product and marketing perspective to see how to completely reshift a company and product from consumer and building now for an enterprise, which is a different mindset. So yeah, so my background basically is all those touch points of experience from different situations in life.
Tell us more about AllFactors and how you approach analytics, and why did you even decide to tackle this industry? Because it's super competitive, then it's also not easy from the technical standpoint. So how do you why do you feel confident in this direction?
Yeah. So AllFactors, to kind of drive the point home with the background story, my next startup after that job was VoxSnap. And AllFactors is a pivot from VoxSnap. So VoxSnap, we started in 2017. I assembled my team. My co-founder worked on analytics at AppDynamics, and our design co-founder was a coworker. And so the three of us came together and built a solution to convert blog posts into podcasts, into audio, basically, where you can embed that audio in your blog post to increase engagement. And then you can distribute that into the podcasting platforms to increase reach and reach new audience. And so from there, we started working with customers. We found really good customers like Silicon Valley Bank. And as we were working on that product, we did realize that it's a niche product. So as a startup, it wasn't that scalable. But then the insight there for all factors was that it was very tedious to configure analytics to drive our business forward. And the way we initially found that out was through our own actually product, where you would have an embeddable player that we provided for you on your webpage, and we can tell you how many people listen to your blog post. And let's say 100 people come in and 10 or 20% listens. So we know how they engage, how engaging that blog post is from that. But what happens with the rest, 80 to 90%? Did they read the blog post? Was it engaging for them? And so trying to figure out those data points and diving in into Google Analytics and then researching other analytics tools, we realized, oh my God, you have to configure all of that manually if you want to track engagement, if you want to understand if people actually are reading your blog post. You need to do it yourself with a JavaScript developer. You need to configure scroll depth, time on page, create that formula yourself. It sucks. And then that is just one aspect. If you want to understand which buttons are clicked in terms of call to actions, what converts, which forms are converting. And then for media plays, we could tell audio, but we couldn't tell video. So all of these data points was so much work to configure that we realized, wow, there is a deeper problem here that we can solve, which is automating all of that as a marketing, as a web marketing analytics tool. So first of all, solving that problem of not needing to configure anything, because it's ridiculous that that's even something that needs to be done. Now, granted, it's not easy to have a tool that automatically, quote unquote, configures itself. You really need to be, you need to have high empathy for your customer. And in our case, we were our customer. And plus, our customers were in our target market for that new product, which was people that are managing websites, whether it's a founder or a marketer, people that need to drive their business forward with their website and their marketing. And so in that aspect, understanding what insights actually need to be extracted out of data, and that those insights cannot be extracted if the data is not even collected properly. That was the first pain point to solve. And that's what All Factors solves. That's where there's the competitive advantage. And the uniqueness about it is that the initial configuration is automatic, because we know as founders, as marketers, what matters in a business. And that's basically what engages, what converts, and what's relevant in terms of audience. And then from there, the extra layer on top of that is incorporating marketing principles into the data to show the insights right away. So you don't need to spend hours on clicking around without finding the data, like the way Google Analytics works. And immediately we just a click of a button, seeing everything you need to see for that specific function, whether you want to see all of your call to actions that are converting or all of the pages that are being actually read. Then I can dive in into more of the insights as we go.
Tell me more how you do this configuration using artificial intelligence. What? Because it's pretty hot of a topic for our team at Userlist, because behavior driven is how we do things. It's like the heart of the product, but the setup that's required to collect and configure user behavior, the integration, it's impossible to get easy, because you got to figure out what to track, et cetera, et cetera. So you somehow managed, even though it's about the pre-sign up marketing website, you somehow managed to overcome that. Tell us more how that works behind the scenes.
Yeah. So when you look at web marketing analytics and you look at what is it that people interact on the website, there's a pattern about it. And actually understanding that comes from understanding how SEO works, search engine optimization. Because with SEO, you need to do on-page optimization. And when you know what to optimize, that's basically what's going to make your site ready to be indexed well by Google. Of course, there's also off-page SEO that you do, like link building. And then when you write content, you have the right keywords. But basically, Google indexes your HTML, and the HTML has a pattern about it. Like all the HTML will be very similar. When you define your button names and your form names, and when you have a media embedded on your website, it will have similar tags. Some of the naming will be different, but the overall tagging will be similar. So there's a pattern about it. So that's how our engineering is done. That's how our script is built, is by understanding those patterns. So basically what we did, we defined all of those patterns. And then when the script is on the site, it knows, it recognizes the patterns, and that's how it's able to map all of those calls to actions, all of the forms, all of the media, whether it's audio or video. And then when it comes to engagement and readership, specifically readership, because engagement can be different things. It can be reading and clicking and listening and watching. So specifically, when it comes to readership, it's the scroll depth and time on page, and it's basically the natural user behavior that when we read. And so the script also knows that, like words per second and the way you are reading, if you're reading fast or you're reading slow. The script takes all of that into consideration to calculate the readership score.
So that has something to do, something similar with the technologies like heat maps and click maps and things like that? Or is it slightly different? You're sort of able to quantify those kinds of insights.
Exactly. We're able to quantify those kinds of insights. The heat map analytics tools, they show you recordings of specific users where you can dive into specific sessions. We think about it as more of a bird's eye view, where we can show you from the top what's the most engaging with a majority of your users. And of course, it's important to also understand that some of the traffic that comes to our site is not actual users. Some of it can be bots. So the ability to define what your real traffic and remove bot traffic out of it also removes some of that noise, because in a cumulative number, you're able to see what actually drives results overall. And you don't really need to dive into specific sessions, which you can do with other tools like the heat mapping tools. And that can help you with figuring out if something doesn't make sense on your website based on seeing individually a few sessions. But overall, metrics for each blog post, like readership, for example, it can be a blog post, it could be a product page. If you can tell that 80% of users that come to this page read more than 60% of this page, that means it's good. That means it's engaging. If more than 80% only read like 20 to 30%, that means you need to change something about it. So that's how you can quickly tell from the bird's eye view what to change. And then, of course, once you want to dive in further, you can always go to specific sessions, groups, to see also where people come from, their sources. Because let's say in that 80% that engaged with your page, how much they read, you can dive in and say, okay, let's say 50% of that 80%. And so half of that 80% came from Google search, and the other half came from a Facebook ad. And in that Facebook ad, they are reading more than they are reading if they're coming from a Google search, and vice versa. So that gives you more insight into which channels are actually relevant for the engagement. And then further down from there, you can dive in more and understand also in those groups, if we can give you data around demographic and location, you can see further if there's a difference in where they come from in terms of location. So you can understand further your audience and further what works and what doesn't work on your website.
Thanks so much for sharing the magic behind the scenes, because that's definitely fascinating. But let's talk about the actual subject of what shall be measured and what kind of insights shall we be looking for. Let's imagine we're product people, SaaS founders. We have a classic marketing website, more or less similar structure. I guess that somehow gives, you know, food for your learning mechanism. What kind of insights shall we even care about to measure the productivity of our content marketing, the productivity of our ads and everything? And you sort of started answering that already a little bit, but in general, what kind of insights can drive our business? Because we collect data and it just stays there. It's such a big strategy for a lot of us out there in product.
Right. So two things. First of all, when you have your website up, you just finished designing it and you have calls to actions. So you designed the website to educate and convert. And so because of that, what are your metrics around educating? So that awareness, does that come across? Does each page on your website, it can be obviously homepage will drive most of the traffic. And then from there, if you want people to learn more, they click on further pages that will be product pages. And then from there, if you want to give them just educational information about relevant things that they want to or need to learn about, you will drive them to your blog. And so throughout that user journey, there's going to be engagement via reading a page or listening to an audio or a video. And so you want to know, if I have a piece that needs to be engaged with, it can be even just the text, if I don't have the audio or video, was it being read? And looking at it from a number of quality sessions instead of just per session, because when you look at it in heat maps, you don't really know if people are reading. You can see the mouse moving, but there's no really readership score. And so in this case, when you can understand readership score, you can say, okay, the copy that I wrote for this web page is resonating, because let's say if it's the homepage and I have most of the traffic there and it's 60 to 90% readership. That's amazing. That means that messaging is really resonating with my audience, with the traffic that comes to my page. And that traffic is being driven by me, either organic by being indexed well, or just telling people about my website and they come to it, or by the marketing activities that I do, all the ads that I'm driving. So from there, when you go deeper into content and you think about your content marketing and SEO, there are specific rules there that SEO and content marketers practice in order to drive that function forward. And some of those rules are obviously the keywords, doing a focus keyword for every article and the ability to rank for that keyword. So one of the things that we do, we integrate in all factors with Google Search Console, and we're able to show you for each of your blog posts, is it ranking for the keyword you want it to be ranking for, or for which keyword it does rank for and in which position. And that gives you an understanding what you need to do to rank higher, hopefully in the first page at some point. We show you if there is low engagement on that web page, which will deteriorate, it will remove from your ability to rank if your engagement is low. So that's one thing to fix. So if your engagement is low on that page, then we tell you that you need to fix the content to increase engagement. You either need to create more content or more relevant content on that page. And then from the other side, if the page is very engaging, but there is low traffic, so not as many people come to that page, would tell you that you need to drive more traffic to this page because it's very engaging. And especially if it can be engaging, meaning readership score is high, and converting if you have a call to action there. So it can be a product page, it can be a blog post. If you have a call to action there and that call to action is converting, that's even higher value for your business. And we tell you, look, these pages are really valuable for your business, drive more traffic to them. And so if you're trying to understand and extract that data with existing tools like Google Analytics, that's going to take you a while to figure that out. And so with us, it's a few clicks and you know exactly what works, to which you need to drive more traffic, and what doesn't, which means you need to fix that. And then with SEO, there is more insight, granular insight, like specific blog posts that are performing well. You should update them every, say, 6 months. So there's like a little timer on each blog post that's performing well and basically tells you, it's not a timer, it's like a marker. It's basically a marker that tells you, hey, you should update this blog post to rank better because it's time to update it. It's performing very well and it should be updated. So things like that, that brings that layer of insight based on best practices in that marketing strategy.
Such clarity and just dealing with content separately. I think one of the reasons why dedicated analytics for bloggers have been successful, I don't know, some WordPress plugins, because they help the blogger see their content in a more user-friendly way than in GA and, you know, sort of manage the posts and their performance. And I think you've just taken that to the next level, which is amazing.
Exactly, yeah.
But there are other types of typical pages on a SaaS website, such as a pricing page, dedicated landing pages, which are supposed to be high converting, you know. And how do you differentiate those? Do you have like special sections for them? How do you measure action on those? Because the readership does not necessarily like apply to pricing page, but it's one of the most important ones on your site.
That's a really good point. Yes. And that's something that we had to plan for as we were planning that engagement and readership score. So yes, readership score gets calculated when there's enough content on the page. When the script finds that there's not enough content, what we show you is just time on page and the conversion of the calls to action. Because if there's not enough text on the page, that means the goal of that page is something else. It's not to really read, it's to convert. And in that case, it will be, if it's a form, it will be the submissions, how many conversions. And if it's pricing buttons, it will be which ones are being clicked on the most. And in that case, you can quickly see what packages basically resonate more. So yeah, so when it's a page designed for, as a call to action, then there's more emphasis on the call to action data. But still, to give you an understanding of how much time people are spending on the page, there is the time on page. And you know what's interesting, when I was looking at Google Analytics and learning a lot about it, I realized that the way the time on page is calculated in Google is actually deceiving. And the reason is because, let's say someone goes to my pricing page and they were on homepage and they go to my pricing page. Google Analytics calculates time on page based on the delta. So when going to the pricing page, Google Analytics shows me that the time on page and the homepage was basically the difference between the two timestamps. So that was homepage, right? But now I went to pricing page and I'm on pricing page and I could be there for like 5 minutes looking at pricing, clicking around. And now I left. I left that page because my kids are waiting for food, right? Or I need to walk my dog. And then when I come back, I browse other sites. And so in Google Analytics, because I left that page and I didn't go to another page on my website, it will be a bounce rate. It will be zero time on page on that pricing page. That's very deceiving because that's not true. I did spend 5 minutes. I didn't click on the pricing buttons. So that's where the way we think about analytics and time on page in situations like this is a more accurate calculation of it, in a way where if a user spent time on it and didn't go to another page, that doesn't matter. They spent time here and they engaged, and here's how they engaged: by clicking. So yeah, so to answer the question and bring the point home, we solved that problem with not having many words on the page, with just showing time on page and the CTAs, conversions.
Goal tracking is one of the pains for us, at least, because it's not like you just have one goal, which is a trial sign up. That'd be too easy, but there are always lead magnets, other things, and other ways of people to interact with the page. How do you solve this problem? Do you allow your users to sort of adjust what you automatically concluded and help them manage those goals, et cetera, et cetera?
So the way we think about it is that creating goals with just like moving from one page to another, it's pretty elementary, and I don't need to manually set that quote unquote goal, because that might not even be the right goal. Or even if it's the right goal, but I didn't set up other goals, I'm not going to see other like conversion data. So the way we think about goals, we think about conversions. We show you the path to conversion, which ultimately is what you do when you set up a goal. You tell it, and whatever tool you use, if it, either Google Analytics or any other tool where you can set up a goal, and you say, okay, user moves from this page to this page to this page to this page, that means conversion goal. Is that what you mean with conversion goals, or there's something else that you're thinking about?
Probably having to juggle you know, figuring out those thank you pages for different lead magnets, playing the game with your email marketing tool, and measuring conversions between like subdomains because your app is on the other subdomain, et cetera, things like that.
Right. We try to automate as much as possible of that, so you don't even need to configure the goals or configure separately the subdomains. If you have, say, blog.yourwebsite.com for your blog, and then you have your website.com, we have a way to, in your initial setup process, in your onboarding, we have a way to see your subdomains, and we ask you about them. And then it automatically shows you all of the data for your main domain and for your subdomains, and how that goes across, and the conversions there. So as much automation as possible in terms of you not needing to set up those things, where those things are sort of set up for you from the beginning, and you can just look at the insights and extract the understanding so you can drive your business forward without needing to spend time on setting up anything.
Let me ask you a few challenging questions as we're wrapping this up. And question number one is, of course, the issue of privacy. And where do you think your tool stands, you know, between session replay tools, which are anonymized but questionable, to GA, which doesn't show replays, but also quite questionable in terms of ethics. Where do you stand, and what's your position in terms of privacy?
Yeah, privacy is number one. It's always number one. Following the guidelines of GDPR and CCPA is very important, and further, you know, regulation that will happen beyond GDPR and CCPA. Compliance is very important for any marketing and data analytics tool. Specifically in this case, for all factors, first, it's first party data. There's no tracking across different websites. So the privacy there is, it's an easier case where, because we don't track across different websites, we don't have that notion of having sort of that surveillance aspect. Like other tools have, Google Analytics obviously tracks you across because they use that for their for their ads, for their search and display ads. And then with GDPR and CCPA, it's really about consent and the fact that it's anonymized data always until the user gives some sort of a consent, or if they give you their information. like their email. And then from there, the right to be forgotten. So when the user wants to their data to be removed or their data sent to them, the ability to easily serve that user from that perspective. So in our case, when our customers are using the tool and their users want that, the way we're providing that type of tooling for our customers to serve their users quickly with those requests is very important for compliance with the regulation. So those are the things to keep in mind when you're creating a web marketing analytics tool, is the compliance with the regulation. And if you comply with the regulation, you are basically, you're privacy conscious.
As a product owner, how do you deal with the fact that, yes, everybody hates Google Analytics, but not everybody takes action and steps forward to more advanced paid and advanced analytic tools? And that's the same for many products. It seems that everybody has the pain, but when you start selling the solution, turns out that it's not too big. So as the product owner, how do you deal with the fact that a lot of other product owners face when there's clearly a pain with Google Analytics, but not everybody who hates it takes action and, you know, upgrades themselves to a paid product like yours, which is way more advanced? So as a product founder, owner, what are you going to do or maybe already doing to ensure that switching behavior?
Yeah, that's a good question. The way I'm thinking about it as a user myself is Google Analytics should always be sort of the foundation that I put in my website from day one. And mostly because it is related to SEO and the ability to also have data in your Google Search Console is important. So that layer is basically, it's a must. Everyone should have Google Analytics. But then on top of that, when you are ready to use that data to drive your business forward, and I would say it's probably when you start getting like 200 monthly visitors, mostly organic, and now you're starting to drive more traffic with specific marketing strategies, also can be organic or paid, but now you're starting to get more traffic. That's where you want to actually use that data, extract the insights to help you. And that's where Google Analytics becomes a challenge. And in that case, you're also hopefully you're growing your business, you're making revenue, you now figured out the basic things, and you're able to afford a tool. And the way we're thinking about all factors, we're actually making it very much product-led, which means that the price point is much lower and the onboarding is self-served, where you can quickly go through the initial setup and start using it like immediately as soon as the data is there, which is basically the next day. And by making it super affordable and the price point is sort of value-driven price point, where in the beginning, it's very cheap because you're also, your traffic is somewhat lower. So the price point is up to 2,000 monthly visitors. It's basically around $50, not more than that. And then as your traffic grows, you also extract more value out of it. And that's where the price point shifts up. And by making it that way, affordable, simple, and yet powerful, we're basically unlocking the ability to use data to drive growth without using super expensive tools like Adobe Analytics or even Google 360 gives you a better ability, but it's very expensive. So we're almost democratizing the data and insights power for small businesses. That's how we think about it.
Thanks so much for very insightful answers today. Are there any favorite resources of yours that you'd like to recommend, maybe some of your own or other books and blog posts that relate to analytics, insights, and also maybe some SEO advice, some of your favorites?
Yes. So for resources, one of the things that we're doing right now, I've been learning so much. Actually, before building All Factors, I've spent 6 months just immersing myself into everything related to web marketing and analytics and data. So I took every single possible online course, free courses on marketing, and of course SEO and everything, and advertisement on the Google, on Facebook, even LinkedIn and Twitter. And then once I maximized the free courses, I took a paid course in the MIT Sloan. And that basically covered web marketing analytics, specifically from a very sort of analytical, statistical point of view, and also to understand predictive analytics. And so the reason I'm mentioning that is because I want to bring all of that knowledge as a resource online. And I'm doing it, of course, via the All Factors blog. So that resource is at allfactors.com/blog. And right now I'm creating a series called SaaS Marketing. It's a 4-part series where I'm going to cover the different aspects that founders and SaaS marketers can learn about and or get better at when it comes to SaaS marketing, starting from SaaS marketing strategy, then SaaS marketing activities, SaaS, obviously, metrics, and even how to collaborate across teams, marketing, sales, customer support, engineering, design, because especially with product-led type of SaaS, all of these teams can work together better and use their analytics and data, usage data, to drive the business forward better together, collaborating. So I'm blogging about all that. And then the next thing that I'm doing also is I'm bringing thought leaders in marketing and web to share their insight with me. I'm interviewing them and then I'm writing blog posts about it. So I have one that's coming up in 2 days, blog post with the founder of Copysmith, which is an AI copywriting tool. They're utilizing the latest innovation in artificial intelligence called GPT-3. And that's basically an artificial intelligence API that allows you to create human-like text. And they're using that to automate the creation of different copy, creative copy for ads. So they have Facebook ads, Google ads, and Instagram. And then they have product taglines and product and the product descriptions. And it's freaking phenomenal. It's so amazing. I tried it. So you should try it. It's copysmith.ai. You insert your initial, like very simple, your company name, a very short description, your like 3 keywords for the audience you target, and just 3 keywords for your industry. And it creates the text for you. And it's so good. It's like things I would not come up with on my own that are like professional copy it creates. So that's a great resource for that as well.
Amazing. There's also one more book that you referred to in our pre-recording chat, From Survival to Thrival. So I'd love to include that in the show notes as well. Can you tell us why that book is important to you?
Yes. So the book Survival to Thrival, Building the Enterprise Startup, is a book that kind of opened my mind to thinking product-led, sales-led, because they really define the way a startup is built, a product is built, because the startup is a product and the product is a startup, or it can be, you know, it can be not a startup, but a product is what the creation. And in that sense, the way you are building your product, the way you're thinking about it from day one, about pricing, about positioning, about the way your UI, UX will be, is based on, is it going to be an enterprise sort of heavy lifting, a more complex product that will need to have like hand-holding onboarding and high-touch onboarding, and that's sales-led. And that means your price point will be higher. You will have more staff, like salespeople and account executives, to drive the sale and revenue forward and product usage forward, versus product-led strategy, where it's more like a consumer aspect bringing to the enterprise, brought into B2B. And that's where you're creating a product. And from day one, you're sitting with your engineers and your designers and thinking, how do we make this product to be self-serve? It's going to be also cheaper. So it's not going to be driven by salespeople and account executives for the sale and onboarding. The product will be driving that, which means a user can sign up to it very easily. They can onboard themselves. They can figure out how to use the product themselves. We're going to have resources online for them where they can read or watch videos, but they basically don't need to talk to anyone unless they have a bug that they need to report, and they can quickly start using the product. And so that basically affects everything that you do in your planning and your organization, because that drives the people that you need to hire, the type of product that you need to build, the type of processes that you need to create, even the type of messaging that you're going to have. So thinking about it from that perspective of sales-led and product-led is very important to shape the entire product and company.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because it so much resonates with our own personal learnings after running Userlist for 3 years. Because sometimes we talk about user onboarding a lot and at our new show and everywhere, and it feels like an afterthought for many people. And it's like, you need to improve your user onboarding. But literally, that use of adoption should be baked into your product from the start. And I'm excited to see how you're solving that inside your product with, sort of automated learning setup. And that's a super hard problem, the setup for analytics. And that's quite thrilling how you solved that pain by design from the start.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, it goes back to having empathy towards your customer, because when you experience it on your own, the pain point, you definitely have empathy because you experience it. But then also when you think about your customer and put yourself in the shoes of the customer, I think that's where naturally you start developing better products. And you're almost thinking about the flow from the perspective of, if I had like no understanding in this, how would I try to understand it? So I'll give you an example. When we built our onboarding flow, a lot of the things in the configuration instructions made a lot of sense to my CTO and the developer co-founder. It was very trivial to him, certain things that you need to put in and doesn't require much instruction. But when I looked at it, I was like, are you kidding me? This is like without instruction and showing exactly how to do it. It might be confusing. It needs to be very clear, extra clear. And so that type of thinking, where constantly asking yourself questions and putting yourself in the shoes of the user, and especially when you can test it with users, even better, that's the constant iteration and constant improvement. Even when you think that you have it right, it can always be better. So always testing that and always trying to improve and simplify. The keyword here is simplify. And like in our case, one of the things that are simplified beyond just the common sense is where we tell you in the onboarding that there's like creation of a CNAME, so the script won't be nulled or blocked by ad blockers. And creating CNAME is very simple, but if you've never done it before, it's like it's not straightforward. And to set up that CNAME, you need to know your hosting. And a lot of times my domain can be in GoDaddy. I'm using then AWS for my server hosting, but actually my site is in Cloudflare. And so if I don't know that, I could send the instructions. Obviously, I'm going to send it to my IT person, but it can be nice if I know that. And if we can show you automatically what you have, like the instructions exactly that you need, because that's what you're using on your website, we can detect that. That's even easier without you needing to select your host, because you it might be not the right selection. So the ability to recognize it automatically and show you, here's what you're using, is like one step forward in that onboarding, in making it easier for you to figure out how to do it. So that's one example.
Thanks so much for sharing your insights today. And just to recap briefly, where can people find you online?
Yeah, so Twitter, of course. You can just search for Helena Ronis and you will find me. My handle is Curious Leyne, the word curious, and then Leyne, L-E-Y-N-E. And then you can always find me on LinkedIn as well. So connect with me on LinkedIn. Look for Helena Ronis. I'm also on Facebook. I actually run a group for women founders of startups. It's called the Women Founders Community. That's the name on Facebook. You can search for it. It's the largest group for women founders of startups. It's 11,700 founders. That's pretty amazing.
Oh,
so
wow.
Yes. Yeah. So if you're a founder of a startup or work at a startup or a techie who someday wants to start a startup, feel free to join the group. We share a lot of resources there. And then my email, helena@allfactors.com. Always welcome emails. And finally, if someone wants to try the product, it's at allfactors.com. And we're going to be onboarding customers from the invite list. And it's going to be an initial free beta. So I'm looking forward to seeing everyone on that list.
Amazing. Well, thanks again and hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
Thank you so much. You too.